WKAR's Studio S at Michigan State University, this is Current Sports.
Yes, it is about that time. Once again, folks, welcome to Current Sports on this October 15th, 2013. Hope you all are having a fantastic start to your week. Baseball fever is certainly in the air today as the Tigers, yes, they are back in action today. Trying to forget about that game two disaster against the Red Sox. Justin Verlander takes the mound today against John Lackey. 4 p.m. is the first pitch, ladies and gents. Don't miss that. And did you know that today is the 25th anniversary of one of the greatest moments in sports history? Yes, the 25th anniversary of Kirk Gibson's magical home run in 1988 as the Dodgers ended up topping the Athletics in five games. The call of that moment was so legendary.
But the game right now is at the plate. High fly ball into right field. She is gone! In a year that has been so improbable, the impossible has happened.
Yes, how can you forget that moment? Yes, that was Vin Scully's call of that incredible, incredible moment in sports history. And in honor of that moment, we are going to have a special Top 5 Tuesday for you all as we list the top 5 greatest sports calls of all time. We also want to hear what your list looks like. Give us a call and share your favorite sports call. Your favorite sports call you've ever heard. In doing so, you will be entered in this week's drawing to win two tickets. That's right, two tickets to go to the MSU-Purdue football game this Saturday at Spartan Stadium. The number to call is 517-355-9527. Again, that's 517-355-9527. Again, call in and share your favorite sports call of all time, and you will automatically be entered into this week's drawing to win two football tickets to go to that MSU-Purdue football game on Saturday. I also want to remind you that you can be in the TV studio audience this week when my guest on Current Sports TV is basketball player, parent, and coach Carlton Valentine. Yes, Valentine played at Michigan State in the 80s and coached the Lansing Sexton Big Reds to two state championships back-to-back, that is. His son Denzel Valentine is, of course, many of you in Spartyland know this. He is the current guard for Michigan State's basketball team. Now, recording takes place tomorrow night at 6:30 p.m. at WKAR Studios on the MSU campus. Seats are free, but reservations are strongly recommended because seating is limited. That's Current Sports with Al Martin and guest Carlton Valentine. To reserve your free seats to be in the TV audience, please visit WKAR.org. And we also, yes, also will be giving out two tickets at tomorrow night's taping. Yes, at the taping, if you're part of that live audience, your name will be entered. We're going to do it randomly, and if your name is chosen, you could win two tickets to that MSU-Purdue football game as well. So, again, go to WKAR.org to be a part of that Current Sports TV audience as I sit down with former MSU basketball player. He is now he was now former coach of the Lansing Sexton Big Red basketball team and father to Denzel Valentine and Drew Valentine, who played basketball at Oakland University. So, again, go to WKAR.org to sign up. We're starting early with our phone calls. Phone call on line one. How you doing? Welcome to Current Sports.
Hey, this is John from Hall. How you doing, man?
How you doing? Welcome to the show.
Hey, my favorite call ever in sports was the Olympic gold medal that the hockey team won in Lake Placid, New York, against the Soviet Union.
Oh, how can you forget that? Do you believe in miracles? That was actually February 22nd in 1980, the USA taking on the USSR. Great call right there. That's number one on my list. I'll just tell you right now. It's an unbelievable call by Al Michaels right there. Thanks so much, man.
Thanks, man. Yeah, that was incredible with the passion and everything of that call. So thank you.
Yes, no prob, no prob. Again, if you want to share your favorite sports call of all time, give us a call here at the studio, 517-355-9527. Again, that's 517-355-9527. In doing so and sharing your favorite sports call or sports moment of all time, you will be automatically entered in our drawing to win two football tickets to this week's MSU-Purdue football game. So again, that's 517-355-9527. Yes, and how can you forget about that miracle moment and miracle call between the USA and USSR in 1980. Magical moment. They even made a movie out of it. Great stuff there. All right, well, let's dive into our show before we get to our Top 5 Tuesday segment. Here are your current sports headlines on this October 15th, 2013. Shalique Calhoun, Big Ten Network analyst Time Dinehart named Calhoun the Big Ten's defensive player of the first half, noting his 3 touchdowns, 5.5 tackles for a loss, and 13 QB hurries. Now, Calhoun's performance in the Spartans' 21-6 win over South Florida was highlighted by Dinehart. Dinehart went on to say, quote, Calhoun scored on an interception return and a fumble return. Good thing, because the Spartan offense was struggling in a 21-6 win versus the Bulls. Calhoun scored the week before on a fumble return. So through two games, the 6'4", 250-pound Calhoun was outscoring the offense 3 touchdowns to 2. How can we forget that moment, right? We were all pulling our hair out here in Sparty land. Darquez Dennard made Dinehart's all-Big Ten midseason team, as did outside linebacker Danikos Allen and Shalique Calhoun. Now, honorable mention picks for Michigan State included Jack Allen, Blake Treadwell, Max Bulla, Curtis Drummond, and Mike Sadler. Now, among the more notable Spartans not mentioned by Dinehart were McGarrett Kings Jr., Tyler Hoover, Trey Wans, and Tywan Jones. Lakewood Volleyball, the Lakewood Vikings swept league rival Williamston 25-11, 25-16, and 25-19. In the CAAC White title match in Lakewood on Monday. Now, Lakewood, they took an early lead before going on a 16-point scoring run to take the first set, 25-11. The Vikings took a strong position on defense, and Williamson struggled, really struggled with errors on their side of the court. Now, junior Vanessa Reinhout led the Vikings with 11 kills and 3 blocks, and freshman Gabby Schellenbarger contributed 21 assists. Now, sophomore Renee Sturm led the Hornets with 6 kills, 6 aces, and 10 digs. Junior Madison Seaman added 7 kills for the team. And junior Paige Dutcher finished with 15 digs. Dodgers win game 3. The Dodgers, man, behind the theatrics of Yasiel Puig, who was unbelievable last night. They leveled the St. Louis Cardinals 3-0 last night, finally claiming a game in the NLCS. Now, Puig's youthful, that youthful energy that he has, which energized the Dodgers as they surged from last place to first during a torrid midseason stretch. It was on full display. Yasiel Puig was on full display in the fourth inning. The 22-year-old Cuban defector was so excited that when he connected on a triple, he raised his arms immediately and stood in the batter's box to watch the flight of the ball toward right field, clearly thinking it was a home run. Now, once he realized it wasn't, Puig started charging. He roared into third base, yes, a triple, and clapped his hands before raising them as a sellout crowd of 53,940 people cheered. His energy is just unbelievable. And, it's funny because after that game, Puig was so excited because he had been in a little bit of a drought, and to finally emerge and to really get back on track. Puig was just out there just having a good time, and players for the Cardinals, they didn't really appreciate it. A few of them going on to note and say that Puig has to act like he's been there before. But hey, man, let the kid have some fun. He's out there 22 years old, and in the MLB playoffs in a huge moment like that, I would have been going crazy too. Hanley Ramirez said after the game that, quote, he brings unbelievable energy each and every day. When we spoke to him, he told me, I got it today. And he did. He's a great player. Now, Game 4 is tonight at 8 p.m. at Dodger Stadium with Ricky Nolasco scheduled to start against St. Louis right-hander Lance Lynn. So that should be a good one. Let's see if they can even the series there. Again, it was one of the greatest moments in sports history, and a moment in which all playoff baseball magic is measured. Former Detroit Tiger Kirk Gibson's home run in Game 1 of the 1988 World Series when the Dodgers were taking on the Athletics 25 years ago. Can we hear that once again, Aaron? I mean, that moment was just one more time. Just hit it was one more time, man, because that moment for me, when you talk about MLB playoff baseball, you hear that call, and you get chills up your spine, man. One more time.
But the game right now is at the plate. High fly ball into right field. She is gone! In a year that has been so improbable, the impossible has happened.
Wow. What a call. What a call. And today we have a special Top 5 Tuesday again for you all in honor of that incredible call. We are going to give you our top 5 greatest calls in sports history. And I also encourage you all to call in and give yours. 517-355-9527. If you call in, you will automatically be entered in our drawing to possibly win 2 football tickets to this Saturday's MSU-Purdue football game. Call now, 517-355-9527. Again, 517-355-9527. Let's talk some wings really quick. At least one Boston rally fell short. Now, the day after the Red Sox late game comeback over the Tigers, the Red Wings withstood a third period rally in a 3-2 win over the Bruins. Now, second period goals from Steven Weiss and Daniel Cleary. The Wings jumped out to a 3-1 lead and held on for dear life after Milan Lucic's late goal made it a one-score game. Now, Jonas Gustafsson filled in for Jimmy Howard in goal, who's nursing an injury to his catching hand and was a late scratch. Now, I tell you what, if you look at this, Gustafsson, he wasn't that bad. Gustafsson said of his short prep time as he started goalie, quote, afterwards, maybe 15, 20 minutes before the game started, it felt good. I was excited to play. It's always fun to go out and have your first game, especially when we have a chance to win. He seemed plenty ready in his first action of the season, stopping 28 shots in the win. All right, M&F. That's right, Monday Night Football. The San Diego Chargers shut down the Indianapolis Colts for a 19-9 win on Monday night. Phillip Rivers threw for 237 yards and found rookie Keenan Allen in the end zone for the lone TD of the evening. And that's really all it needed to beat me in fantasy football. It's just one guy left, Phillip Rivers, as quarterback, and I lost. Yeah, I hate fantasy football right now. The Colts, led by second-year signal caller Andrew Luck, couldn't move the ball against a previous suspected San Diego defense. Luck said afterwards, quote, "We stunk in the third on third down today." End quote. He went on to say also that a lot of credit goes to their defense. I think we made our fair share of mistakes, but I think it's what they did. If we can't convert third downs and drives continually stall like that, it's a short rest for our defense and no points for us. So it's a bad combination. Now, in a lone bright spot for the Colts, receiver Reggie Wayne caught his 1,000th NFL pass. Congrats to Reggie. And passed Hines Ward for 8th on the all-time leaderboard. All right, sad news in the world of baseball. MLB umpire Wally Bell. He died of an apparent heart attack on Monday. The 48-year-old Bell had just worked the NLDS between the Pirates and Cardinals. Bell, who has had heart issues before, including a quadruple bypass surgery in 1999, had not been feeling well over the weekend and was scheduled to see doctors later Monday at a Cleveland clinic. Quote, "All of us at Major League Baseball are in mourning tonight regarding the sudden passing of Wally Bell." That's from Commissioner Bud Selig. He said that in a statement. He goes on to say, "I always enjoyed seeing Wally, who was a terrific umpire and such an impressive young man. On behalf of our 30 clubs, I extend my deepest condolences to Wally's family, fellow umpires, and his many friends throughout the game." Now, Bell had worked the 2006 World Series and 3 All-Star games, including this season, over his 21-year career. The doping, the World Doping Agency has set its sights on a new target, and that target is Jamaica. Yes, after claims from former director of the Jamaica Anti-Doping Commission, Renee Ann Shirley, alleged the country didn't test its athletes for entire months leading up to the games. Now, the WADA is looking into Jamaican agency. And WADA Director General David Howman said in an interview that, quote, there was a period of maybe 5 to 6 months during the beginning part of 2012 where there was no effective operation, no testing. There might have been one or two, but there was no testing. So we were worried about it, obviously. Now, while Jamaica may have not tested athletes themselves, the International Association of Athletics Federation says they did test the Jamaicans extensively before Olympic competition. So we'll see as the coming days come to see how that plays out. Well, those are your current sports headlines. If you want to comment on any of those, give us a call at 517-355-9527. Again, that's 517-355-9527. Again, we are doing our Top 5 Tuesday segment, which we're going to start right now, actually. And we're in honor of the 25th anniversary of that incredible, incredible moment in baseball history and in sports history in general. Kirk Gibson's magical home run in 1988 as the Dodgers ended up, you know, topping the Athletics in that series. But that game one homer was unbelievable. And we're asking you to call in and share your moments, and you will automatically be entered to possibly win two MSU Purdue football tickets for this Saturday's game. And I believe we have a caller right now on line one. How you doing? Welcome to Current Sports.
Hi, how you doing?
Great, great.
Yeah, I don't know if it'll get a lot of people remember, but it was the 2007 Appalachian State block field goal when they beat Michigan.
Yes. Yes, that is actually on my list. Those announcers went crazy, didn't they?
Yeah. Good game, though.
Yes, that is a perfect setup for as we start Top 5 Tuesday, because that actually starts my list, Matt. You know, we both had similar, you know, we had a few on our list. That was actually number 5, Michigan and Appalachian State in 2007. That incredible, incredible upset there. Let's hear that call.
Snaps good. The whole
thing. Oh! Michigan Wolverines!
They went crazy. I mean, come on, you're playing Michigan, and a huge moment like that, I would have went crazy too. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, easily the biggest, you know, most notable moment in school history for that program.
Yeah.
I mean, they have every right to go crazy. And that was in the day before FCS teams were beating FBS teams on a semi-regular basis. I mean, that was like the first big Titan to fall. So
yeah, I mean, and then one announcer just yelling. He's just, oh my, ah!
Just can't contain it.
Oh, he just had to let it all out. That is that's a great moment there. For number four to me, that was my number five. Four on my list had to be George Foreman and, you know, Joe Frazier. Of course, the historic call of down goes Frazier. Here it is.
Find out tonight how much the Ali fight took out of Frazier, if anything. And we'll find out tonight just how good George Foreman is in punching and in taking a punch. I think he hurt Joe Frazier. I think Joe is hurt. Angie Dundee, Ali's trainer, right next to me is saying it. You may hear him. Down goes Frazier! Down goes Frazier! Down goes Frazier! The heavyweight champion is taking the mandatory 8 count, and Foreman is as poised as can be in a neutral corner. He is as poised as can be. We have a minute left in this first round, and already this fight is proving out what some have expected.
Yes, that was the legendary Howard Cosell on that call. Again, that was George Foreman and Joe Frazier in one legendary fight. Joe Frazier goes down. I wonder if these announcers, you know, when I think about this, Matt, and I used to do it when I was little, when I was thinking about being an announcer or possibly play-by-play guy, if they practice, you know, that kind of thing.
Absolutely.
If they have a list of puns, you know what I mean?
Oh, well, yeah, I mean, look no further than, like, Jim Nance for you know, tying in a silly, insignificant pun to a sporting event. But, I mean, that one especially, I mean, you know, it's so iconic just because of Cosell. And you know, it's not Frazier, it's Frazier.
Hey, Frazier, you know what I mean? I got to love
Downey went. Yeah. And, you know, it's a great call, a legendary broadcaster. I mean, Don't get any better than that.
It's one of those moments you just look at, and you know, sometimes the announcers just make the moment. You know what I mean?
Right.
They create the atmosphere, the words they use. I mean, you know, and Howard Cosell, he was a master at it, and that was just an unbelievable call right there. Here's one, you know, because I'm a huge Michael Jordan fan, so I had to, you know, pick one up from Michael's The Shot. We all, Cleveland fans know that's The Shot. We all, the NBA world knows it as The Shot. Of course, Jordan playing Cleveland in the playoffs, and this incredible moment right here. Got to listen to this.
The inbounds pass comes into Jordan. Here's Michael at the foul line. A shot on Elo. Good! The Bulls win it! They win it! Set the Cleveland Cavaliers. Michael Jordan hits it at the foul line. 101-100.
Yeah, and they're going nuts, too. I mean, they're losing their voice at that moment. But it was one of those incredible moments. Jordan just had a thing about Craig Elo. I mean, anytime Craig Elo, throughout his entire career, was guarding Jordan in the clutch, it was a highlight reel. Of just Jordan. If you can probably YouTube that. I think I YouTubed that the other day. You just type in Jordan and Craig Elo. It's like a 2 to 3 minute video of just Jordan just torching Elo in so many plays. But yeah, that's an iconic moment. And of course, you know, sticking with the NBA here, John Havlicek stealing the ball, Boston Celtics versus the Philadelphia 76ers, and on April 15th, 1965, here is one iconic call.
5 seconds left. Boston only has a 1-point lead.
Greer is putting the ball on a play. He gets it out deep, and Havlicek steals it.
Yes, that was legendary announcer Johnny Most on that call. You know, that's another legendary moment that many, many people know about. And I think that also made your list as well, Matt. And, of course, number one, as our caller who called in just a minute ago alluded to, the Miracle on Ice, February 22nd, 1980, USA, USSR, Al Michaels on the call here.
Getting it to Schultz. Now Petrov controls. Back to Harlamov. Skating in on the left side. Into the American end, 55 seconds, but Mikhailov has the puck. Mikhailov sweeping in, out in front, backhander goes wide. I think Krejman got just a piece of it. Mikhailov, back out to Billy Legendov. 43 seconds remaining. Morrow, checked into the boards, it comes back to center ice. 38, 37 seconds left in the game. Petrov with it, the Americans on top, 4-3. Long shot, Craig able to get a piece of it to sweep it away. 28 seconds. The crowd going insane. Harlamov shooting it into the American end again. Morrow is back there. Now Johnson, 19 seconds. Johnson over to Ramsey. Billy Legendov gets checked by Ramsey. McClanahan is there. The puck is still loose. 11 seconds. You've got 10 seconds. The countdown going on right now. Morrow up to Schultz. 5 seconds left in the game. Do you believe in miracles?
Wow, what a call there. That's a young Al Michaels there.
Yeah, it almost doesn't even sound like him.
You know, when I was doing research on this, they said it was Al Michaels. Every time I hear that clip, you know, it's like I cannot put a face to the voice now. You know, it's like his voice changed over time. I don't know.
But, absolutely, and when I think of it in my head, you think of current-day Al Michaels making that call, but
exactly.
He really does. He sounds totally different.
He sounds totally different there. It's a young Al Michaels in that call again. It's 1980 Winter Olympics, the ice hockey medal round match between the United States and the Soviet Union. February 22nd, to be exact. Unbelievable there. So, yeah, that rounds out my top five, Matt. How's yours look, man?
All right, well, a couple of them have already been mentioned. Unfortunately, it's my top two. So, spoiler alert, everybody.
Spoiler alert.
All right. So, number five is Kurt Gibson. We've already played that a couple times. Great moment. You know, Vince Scully. Number four, I really tried hard to shoehorn in an MSU sporting event here.
There you go.
Was thinking about Little Giants, but we used to play that as our intro. So, I thought, we've done that.
You've done
thought
that.
About Rocket. But when you go back and watch that play, the instant replay, there's so much doubt that you don't really get a great call out of Brent Musburger.
Right.
But that was the key. I found Brent Musburger. He's got to have, you know, tons of great
so
moments.
Many.
The one that sticks out to me, a little guy named Doug Flutie throwing a Hail Mary. Here we go.
Yeah.
Flutie flushed. Throws it down. Caught by
Boston College. I don't believe it. Oh, it's a touchdown. The Eagles win it.
Man, it's always about not believing it. Nobody can believe anything.
Right. You know, Brent Musburger is another. He's just a legend, man.
Oh, yeah.
He's another one of those guys that can just paint a picture and just really just capture a moment. That's a gift. So to be able to do that as an announcer, it's a gift.
And the
not
other
a
thing,
lot of people can do that.
The other thing is when some of those moments come on, I really like it when the announcers just kind of let it go.
Yeah, let it breathe.
And know when to, you know, kind of, you know, shut their mouths and just let the moment be the moment.
Right.
Because,
right,
you know,
right,
there's something about the crowd just going nuts and it's a huge moment. You just got to let it breathe and, you know, just.
Yeah. And there's got to be a gift to that, too, because, I mean, some announcers can let it breathe and know when to interject and what to say during those moments. That's talent, man. That's tough.
So I think you paid the big bucks. That's honestly, right, now that I'm looking at it, I cannot believe Gus Johnson did not make my list. What
is wrong with us?
Oh, my
gosh. That's one of my favorite announcers, man.
We're just going too far back to these classic calls. But number three, another big-time famous call, Cal Stanford, the game, 1982. Here we go.
And they saved it. They pulled it out. What a show. All right, here we go with the kickoff. Harmon will probably try to squib it, and he does. Ball comes loose, and the Bears have to get out of bounds. Along the sideline, another one. They're still in deep trouble at midfield. They tried to do a couple of. The ball is still loose as they get it to Rodgers. They give it back now to the 30. They're down to the 20. Oh, the band is out on the field. He's going to go into the end zone. He's going into the end zone. Will it count? The Bears have scored, but the bands are out on the field. There were flags all over the place.
That was complete chaos. That
absolute
right
chaos. I mean, you know, it's one thing to have a game-winning play and have a great call, but when it's just something so bizarre like that. I mean, at the very beginning, if you were listening closely, he says, like, you know, when Stanford pulls it out, what a great win. And it's not over till it's over.
It's not over until the fat lady sings.
And clock
the fat
did not read 0-0-0.
Yeah, that fat lady, she was not done playing on that one because the band was on. That's an unbelievable moment. Great call. Great
Crazy.
Call. It's just straight-up emotion there.
Bad luck for that trombone player who just gets railroaded.
Just got trampled, yeah.
All right, number two, I'm going to copy you, Al. John Havlicek, the steal in 65. And then number one, it's got to be the Miracle on Ice.
It's great.
Nothing tops it.
Yeah, nothing tops it. I mean, that moment was just so legendary, you know, not just for a particular sport, for an entire nation, you know. And young Al Michaels on the ones and twos there. That was great stuff. Again, that's our top five. What does yours look like? You know, call in and give us your favorite sports call of all time. And in doing so, you will automatically be entered in your chance to win, that's right, two football tickets to this weekend's MSU and Purdue football game. Give us a call, 517-355-9527. Again, 517-355-9527. All right, well, we still have a lot to get to. We'll talk MSU and Michigan football and bring you a pretty cool study done in the NBA world that was conducted by a professor right here at Michigan State University. Don't go anywhere. More current sports is coming right back.
I'm Jeremy Hobson. Next time on Here and Now, retired U.S. Army Captain William Swenson will receive the Medal of Honor 4 years after surviving a 7-hour battle in Afghanistan. But the accounts of what happened during that 2009 firefight are very different. We'll dig into that next time on Here and Now from NPR and WBUR Boston.
That's Here and Now coming up at 2 p.m. Welcome back to Current Sports, as always. I am your host, Al Martin. Again, it's Top 5 Tuesday. We just finished giving you our top 5 greatest sports calls of all time. Of course, it's in honor of the 25th anniversary of one of the greatest moments in sports history, Kirk Gibson's magical home run in 1988 as the Dodgers topped the Oakland Athletics eventually in 5 games. Unbelievable moment there. We're asking you to call in. And if you do and share your moment, you will be entered to win 2 tickets to the MSU-Purdue football game. I believe we have a caller on line one. How you doing? And welcome to Current Sports.
Hi, my name is Gail Fisher, and My personal favorite sports moment was, it was also being there too, was Justin Abdelkader's game-winning goal for the national championship for MSU.
Oh, wow. Wow. What year was that again?
2007.
How can you? Man, that was an unbelievable moment there. Justin Abdelkader now, who has gone on, he's having a pretty good career.
And Scott and Woody's call of that was just fantastic.
And you were there.
I was there.
How was it? Describe the atmosphere of that.
Oh, it was fantastic. everybody just was screaming and yelling and going nuts, and we just couldn't stand ourselves. We were so excited.
Oh, that's great. Probably high-fiving strangers and everything, right?
Oh, you betcha.
Thanks so much for your call. That's a great moment. Thank you.
Okay. Bye.
2007. Yeah, giving a little MSU flavor. I haven't heard the call of that one. You ever
heard
the call of that one?
Oh, yeah. Great. And, you know, take that, Boston. You know, because they beat Boston College in that game.
Right.
And, you know, so I guess we struck first with the comebacks because they were down and they rallied late and scored two late goals and put them away. And, yeah, Abdelkader made a great goal.
Yeah.
I mean, just a centering pass from, I believe, Kennedy, and he puts it away, and then Spartans win a title.
There you go. Great moment there. Again, if you want to share your moment and be automatically entered to win two football tickets to the MSU-Purdue football game this Saturday, give us a call. 517-355-9527. Again, 517-355-9527. And speaking of MSU football, of course, it's Tuesday, and, you know, Mark D'Antonio, head coach, had his weekly MSU press conference, and he talked about a variety of things, and we're going to share and play a few bites from that presser today. And specifically, he talked about the offensive line a little bit today. Here it is, D'Antonio addressing the offensive line.
You don't get asked much about Jack Allen. I think he's playing very, very well. You know, in fact, all the offensive linemen, you get asked about them as a group. You really don't get asked about them individually, but you know, Blake Treadwell is playing very well as well. You know, I could go into those guys, but you know, if you look across the defensive end of things, you would say that Denikos Allen has had a great game last week. But I think all those guys pretty much get talked about.
Yeah, that's head coach Mark D'Antonio talking about the offensive line. Also, again, I want to note that Shalique Calhoun was named the Big Ten's defensive player of the first half by Big Ten Network analyst Time Dinehart, and talked about Shalique's outstanding play. He's been great this entire season. Mark D'Antonio also addressed, the home game fever that they had last season. Of course, MSU losing a lot of close games last year, many at home, and he definitely addressed it. Here he is talking about that.
I consider last year sort of an incident, okay? You know, I don't think we lost the games. I think we ran out of time more often than not. And we didn't lose our way. We didn't lose our home field advantage. Every time we came back to play, we were ready to play. But, you know, the opponents that we play, they have players too. The two preceding years, you know, we were 14-0 at home. And we've always played very well at home. That's been a tradition here. So, you know, we had a tough schedule. We lose to an Ohio State team by one. We lose to a Nebraska by what? Four? You know, I think Northwestern by three. And Iowa in double overtime. So we lost four very close games. The Notre Dame game. How would you say it? An aberration? Okay, so I think that means bad. But so I think we're right on task. You know, we always talk about playing well in Spartan Stadium. We have great fan support here. There's always a big crowd. Our players are always here in front of their families. There's a lot of reasons to play. We're comfortable here. So there's a lot of reasons to play very, very well here. And I don't think we've discouraged people. In the past 6 years, we've been pretty successful here. So we just kind of try and continue that success.
Yeah, Matt, you know what? That's a defending your team type of answer. I think when at the beginning of that bite, when he talks about, I don't think we lost, we just ran out of time, I don't agree with that one.
I mean, it's a cheesy answer, but he's got a point.
Cheesy.
He's got a point.
Well,
I mean, Nebraska, aided by terrible calls by the officials. Iowa scores a touchdown on the last drive on a leg whip that doesn't get called. Braxton Miller fumbles, the Spartans pick it up, look like they're going to score for six. It gets called back. You know,
right,
it's like they caught terrible breaks in all of those games.
They did. If I look at that, though, and I look at last season and the losses they had, if you have any, just some type of offensive consistency, you don't, those nitpicky moments that you talk about right there, they don't become a factor, I don't think.
Right.
And that's the thing. You know, when your defense goes out there and they play, and it goes back to the defense has been outstanding, of course. They've been, we keep talking about this every single week. If MSU's offense produces an average amount of yardage per game, especially in those home games, you don't even have to be in those critical moments where you, quote, run out of time.
Right.
So, I don't know. That's where I'm coming from. That's one of those politically correct type of, okay, I'm defending my team type of answers. But he does have a point. I see where you're coming from, though.
I mean, yeah. I mean, they caught a lot of – every bad break that you could catch, they caught last year.
Yeah.
I mean –
they lost a lot of close games. A lot of close games. I think, what is it, by, you know, so many losses by –
Seven or less.
Seven or less, yes. I mean, it was crazy. And he also talked about that McGarrett Kings fumble. Here he was talking about McGarrett Kings.
We had a sun issue on the punt return, but we had a sun issue. Okay. However, you know, he's got to get his feet set and can't catch a punt on the run. You can catch him on the run, but you better not catch too many on the run because you're going to fumble some. Had his hands out of place. He's got great hands. He's got great skills, and he's had success running the ball back. And I think, you know, he needed a fair catch it first of all. Not that it would have made any difference if he lost in the sun, but. We were in punt safe, so there was no return set up. So he should have fair caught the ball or let it bounce if he lost it. And that's experience. But, however, when you look at the five fumbles that we've lost as a football team, we've lost three on punt returns. And that just should not be happening.
Yeah, that was Mark D'Antonio talking about the McGarrett Kings fumble. And like I said, it's one of those things where the sun was, you know, we talked about before the show. I mean, that sun was directly in his eye. And, you just got to get out the way, I think. Just get out the way, let the ball drop, boom.
Yeah, and like he said, the three fumbles on punt returns, that is unacceptable because those are backbreakers because, you know, the defense gets off the field, well, not so fast. You're coming right back out. And, you know, that's a big momentum play. Indiana scored off of it right there. They got an easy touchdown.
Right.
It puts the defense in a terrible spot after, you know, they do well to get off the field. So those are bad turnovers that they need to remedy before things get more serious schedule-wise.
Yeah, very true. And, you know, it's great that I think they they have a matchup against Purdue now. Again, Purdue is last in the leaders' conference right now, 0-2 in the leaders. And, Michigan State now, they're in that three-way tie with Nebraska and Michigan. If you're a Spartan fan out there, you got to be feeling pretty confident coming to this game. This is one of those games where you can try, you know, some different things. You're coming off the win, you know, like they had this past weekend. You got to be very confident coming into this weekend. I think it's one of those games where, you know, thank goodness that they're playing Purdue now because they can try some things and experiment a little bit. So
they can certainly do that, but they better come out and actually give it a good effort because we've seen, you know, when the team gets going, kind of thinking themselves a little too highly, and then they come out flat and lose to a team that they shouldn't. And that's kind of been remedied in the D'Antonio era. But it's always going to be in the back of Spartan fans' minds that, you know, maybe they come out and they're not ready to play, and then you have a bad loss, and that can derail a season. So they got to take care of business first, then you can start experimenting. Yeah. Maybe get a 20-point lead, and then you start experimenting.
Can't get complacent at this point.
Never.
Never that. So definitely, again, we're taking your calls. Again, today is the 25th anniversary of that historical Kurt Gibson call as he hit a home run in the 1988 World Series, Dodgers and Athletics. How can you forget about that one? Again, we're taking your calls throughout the entire show as you express what your favorite sports call of all time is. Again, 517-355-9527. If you call, your name will automatically be entered in a chance to win two football tickets. That's right, two football tickets to that MSU-Purdue football game. Again, 517-355-9527. And all right, we're going to take a quick break, and then when we come back, we are going to sit down with an MSU professor who has linked up with a national publication recently and done a pretty cool experiment when it comes to the National Basketball Association. Don't go anywhere. You got to hear this. Pretty cool stuff. More current sports coming right back.
Our house is a very, very, very fine house. Graham Nash has written a new memoir. He co-founded the British band The Hollies, which had hits like Bus Stop and Look Through Any Window. He left The Hollies to co-found Crosby, Stills, and Nash. They're still performing together. Graham Nash on the next Fresh Air. Join us.
That's Fresh Air coming up at 3 o'clock. All right, well, now I have the pleasure of welcoming a man who has done some pretty interesting research when it comes to the NBA. I now welcome to Current Sports Ashton Shortridge, who is a MSU professor in the field of geography here at MSU. How you doing, Ashton? Welcome to the show.
Well, great. That's fantastic to be here, Al.
Definitely, definitely. So let's dive right into it, because it's a pretty interesting study that you guys conducted. You and Kirk Goldsberry, who I had no idea before talking with you just now, that Kirk was an MSU professor here and now is gone on to be a contributor for ESPN's Grantland, Bill Simmons' blog, right?
That's exactly right. He was a member of the geography department. He was a cartographer, still is, does great work on visualization, map production, thinking about how people can understand spatial relationships better, and that's going to play right into what we're going to talk about in a little bit.
Now, Ashton, for those who don't know, because I had no idea, what is a cartographer?
Right. So a cartographer is a map maker. It's a person who thinks about how to communicate information about geography to others, and it's a lot of fun. There's lots of graphic design in that, and thinking about how to portray that information.
Yeah. Now, how we got in touch with you, Ashton, was because my production assistant, Matt, was reading an article in Grantland done by Kirk and you, and your name popped up, and it said Michigan State professor. Right. We're like, whoa, we got to get in touch with this guy. And you guys did a cool study concerning the NBA. Can you talk about the study? How did it come about?
Yeah, I'd be delighted to do that. So Kirk and I had spent some time. We like to chat about sports and hang out. And one thing that really came up with us was this idea that a lot of the things that we think about in geographic space, like access to healthcare and across Michigan, we're dealing with these kinds of geographic spaces, but there's a lot of geography to the spaces that are used in athletic events like basketball games. And the basketball court and the spatial relationships of that really drive a lot of, you know, how the game is played. And Kirk got really excited about that. He ended up being able to collect a year's worth of data on where on the basketball court NBA player shots were taken and how they were made. And from there, it kind of ballooned. We started to say, well, how can we use what we know about spatial relationships to maybe make a difference in the way that other people can look at shooting?
And what players specifically did you guys look at here?
Right. So we actually looked at every player in the NBA. Every player. 200,000 shots were taken last season in the NBA. We looked at every one of them. And then we broke it down by player so that we could basically contrast, using the shot score methodology, how well a given player did compared to the rest of the NBA.
Gotcha. You know, now, Ashton, you talk about that shot score.
Yeah.
Can you give a basic explanation of the shot score study that was featured? And what was the study looking at, and what did you find, other than, you know, that LeBron James is just a great player right now?
sure, absolutely. So, basic idea, if you think about players running around on the floor and going up and taking a shot, imagine that when they hit the ground, they leave a little spot of paint on the floor, okay?
Okay.
And so over the course of the game, you're going to develop a whole sort of a constellation of shots. If you're looking down from above at the court, you'd see this sort of scattering of these places where people taking shots. So we now have this technology that allows us to measure these things. And we don't just do that for every player and every in a game. We're looking across the whole season at where a player is shooting from and then how effective they are shooting at all spots across the floor. Mm-hmm. So what this spatial shooting metric that we talked about, the shot score, is we basically look at how the rest of the NBA shoots from a given player's specific shot constellation. Mm-hmm. And so if a player takes all their shots right underneath the basket, well, everybody shoots pretty well underneath the basket. To do better than if they're doing better than the average NBA player, they're shooting, you know, 50, 60, 70%. If you're farther away from the basket, of course, the shooting percentages are lower. But a player can still do better than the average NBA player does from those places on the court. Right. So that shot score kind of summarizes how well against the rest of the NBA each player has done for their particular constellation of shots.
I really think that's cool, because obviously if you're close to the basket, then that percentage is going to be high,
right,
compared to a shooting guard who's taking most of his shots, you know, maybe a lot of three-pointers, a lot of 15-foot
exactly.
jumpers. So you guys, with the shot score technique, take that into account and kind of, you know, put that in perspective and kind of alter the numbers based on that, right?
Exactly. That's right. So somebody that only takes layups, obviously they're going to have a higher field goal shooting percentage than somebody who's taken a bunch of threes. But it doesn't necessarily follow that that person under the basket's really a better shooter than someone who's knocking them down from outside.
Right. Now, Ashton, do you think that the shot score is a better method than your regular field goal percentage
right.
that's used each and every season in the NBA and in basketball in general?
Sure. Right. I think it is, in a certain sense, that the generally a field goal percentage is kind of a what we would call a global metric. It's a global measure of how well you do overall. If LeBron James, it's the end of the half, he takes a shot from 60 feet away,
right.
we don't think that shot's going down, and yet it's going to count against his field goal percentage.
Right, exactly.
So this is a way to really kind of dive in a little bit more on where those shots are being taken. I really think there's two advantages. One is that we get the single score, the shot score that we've talked about.
Right.
The other is that we can produce maps of the court and show where on the court a given player is especially shooting better or worse than the NBA average.
Ashton, with this whole research that you guys did, just simply with the shot score and what you guys found, what was the most interesting thing that really popped out to you and said, wow?
Oh, yeah, okay. Well, one thing was we certainly ranked all the players in the league last year.
Okay.
It's not a big shock that LeBron James comes up on top. You know,
he was number one. LeBron was
number one. Yeah, best shooter by our measure in the NBA. Again, that's not going to be a shock to anybody listening in who
right.
follows the NBA. I think what we were able to see, say, with LeBron, is that he actually shoots better than the league average from an amazing proportion of the court. That he's better shooting from the right on long threes from the right. He's 8 to 15 points better than the rest of the league.
Mm.
Where he really dominates, though, is inside. So he actually leads the league last year in number of points scored right around the basket, and he also led the league in his shooting percentage in that area.
Mm.
So we can look at his performance and say, well, he's just uniformly good. But he's even better close to the basket. And that might be something that we didn't know going into this.
Right. That's very, very interesting stuff. Yeah. Now, Ashton, have you ever done studies like this before, you know, tracking a player's performance? And if so, what have you guys been looking for?
Right. I really haven't. You know, this is
the first one.
Absolutely. I've played around a little bit looking at whether we can predict wins over a season for a college basketball team. So I've
right.
been interested in these kind of statistical approaches to sport, but this is the first time I've really gotten to play around with this kind of data. And I think this is just the beginning of what we can do with
what
it.
What kind of response did have you guys been getting from
right.
the article?
We've gotten a lot of response. You know, I'm an academic, so mostly I publish papers that 15 people read. And it's a little stunning to go out on Grantland and see that, you know, 4,000 people now almost have liked this
yeah.
article. Presumably there are tens of thousands of people who have read it. And that's pretty remarkable.
Right.
I think it's a testimony to the fact that a lot of people are interested in really understanding more about the game than what you can just get out of a box score. And we're trying to extend that and highlight those kind of interesting questions.
Yeah, that's really cool stuff. Ladies and gentlemen, if you're just now joining us to Current Sports, we invite Ashton Shortridge. He's a MSU geography professor and did a really, really cool article with Kurt Goldsberry, who is a contributor to Grantland, Bill Simmons' Grantland blog. Did a very, very cool NBA article. You can check that out on grantland.com. And, you know, Ashton, when you look at that article, you talk about LeBron James being
right.
the number one guy, most productive shooter in the NBA. What did that list look like? What was the top five or top ten?
Right. So Kevin Durant's number two. That's probably not a big surprise to anybody. Again, he's a guy that shoots actually better than LeBron from outside.
Does he?
Yep, tremendous outside shooter. Also scores very effectively inside. But another guy who can pretty much shoot better than anybody from anywhere. Mm-hmm. Number three on the list, I'm glad I can bring up Stephen Curry. He's a guy that's more of a specialist, right? He's a phenomenal outside shooter, and yet he's actually below the league average when he's attacking the basket. So
is he?
When you look at the map of his scores. He takes most of them from outside. He's very good out there. He's not as good inside. So I'm sure he knows this. You know, wow. I'm sure other teams know this.
Right.
And that surely affects his choices about where he's shooting. But for the rest of us, it's pretty interesting, I think, to be able to see that variation and his effectiveness on the court.
So Curry blows a lot of layups. That's what we're getting at, huh?
Well, I think Curry has a little more challenges hitting some of those layups than LeBron James might.
Yeah, without a doubt.
Exactly.
That is very, very cool stuff. Now, I got to ask you, Ashton, was it the data that you guys collected and were able to put this together in such an organized, really easy way to read, to be honest with you, throughout the article, was this technology available back in the 90s or 80s to perform a study like this, or has this had to do with the technology that we now have today?
Right. Not really. You know, in previous decades, there have been a few studies that have divided the court into zones, so maybe 5 or 10, 11 zones, and then people try to record where the shots were taken within those zones. So there's some evidence of that. Obviously, we've always divided the court between two-point shots and three-point shots, and we try to divide those people who shoot three-point field goal percentages high and so on. But at this level of precision, we're really only looking back at most maybe 10 years, and the technology has really been advancing just in the last couple years to be able to study shooting, but also other kinds of actions on a basketball court at a really fine grain of detail.
And how did Kurt, because you said Kurt was the main one who collected a lot of the information, what did he use?
Right, so he sweet-talked a company which was collecting this data into providing him a really large database with all these shots, with 200,000 shots taken.
Yeah.
And they provided that to him, I think, because they wanted to promote the kind of technology that they were able to offer. Mm-hmm. And
how did they do that? Was that by Sport VU cameras?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Right.
Can you talk about that? Because I think that's really cool. You know, I didn't know anything about Sport VU cameras until about 2 weeks ago.
Okay, yeah, this is a really new thing that's spreading very quickly. I think every NBA team is using them right now. They're being used in college as well. The basic idea is they set up a number of cameras around the court, and the video cameras that are pointed at the action. And by looking at different angles between the images in these different cameras, they're able to really accurately locate where players are on the court when things happen, like shots or rebounds, steals, other things.
Right.
And then that information is being automatically recorded and stored in computer databases really right away. So it allows us to work on our shooting data, but I think the implications for where we're going with sports analytics are a lot bigger than that, actually.
Now, Sport VU cameras, are they just being used in basketball, or what other sports are they?
Mm-hmm. Right. There's some interest in soccer. People are looking at using them in soccer, football, and really it's spreading. The technology, the costs on this stuff are really coming down. And again, these are the idea here is if we can extract information that might give a team even just a little bit of an edge, you know, if that extends the playoffs by another game or another series, the financial reward is enormous. And I think that's what a lot of our teams are looking at out there.
Yeah, definitely. Well, before I let you go, Ashton, I mean, what other things are in the works for you guys? Do you and Kirk plan on teaming up again on doing this kind of research regularly or what?
Yeah, we've chatted about where to go with this. You know, one thing that we're interested in doing is breaking this down more than just looking at one player over a whole season. So we can say, well, you know, how well are the Celtics doing against Western Conference forwards in the fourth quarter, right?
Get really specific.
Exactly. So we can start to slice down, I think, a lot finer. So that's one area that we're really interested in looking at. Another would be, can we look at shot scores and shot maps for different players and basically compare them and start to say, well, player A is really a similar kind of a shooter to player B. And maybe that's useful when thinking about trades or drafts or other kinds of personnel decisions that a team has to make.
So it's safe to say that we can see, you know, in the future, you and Kirk teaming up again and doing, you know, this often.
Oh, I hope so.
Something else is coming, right?
Absolutely. We love this stuff.
When's Izzo calling you, Ashton? I mean, that's
you know, I don't know if Tom's going to give me a call. Bill Cowher in football said about a stats guy a few years ago who wrote a paper about going for it more on fourth down.
Yeah.
He said, you know, if we all listen to professors, then we're all going to be out there looking for professors' jobs. So, you know, I'm humble. I'm not trying to tell folks what to do, but it's a lot of fun to look into.
Well, it's a really cool study. Again, Ashton, tell them how they can look at that article for anyone listening.
Sure. Please go check out grantland.com. Kirk Goldsberry is the main author on that. And there's lots of great stuff in there, beautiful maps and all the detail that you might want to know about spatial shooting.
There you go. Hey, Ashton, thanks so much for joining. We got to have you on very soon again. Anytime you do another piece like that, it's
all
great
right.
stuff.
Thank you, Al.
Thank
really
you so much. Appreciate it.
You bet.
Wow. Well, Matt, and I want to get your thoughts on that because that was a very cool article. You're the one who discovered this article. That's unbelievable stuff. You talk about technology. When you talk about a piece like this, Matt, technology's coming a long way. VU cameras tracking every single shot in the NBA. That's crazy stuff, man.
I mean, and those cameras do more than just, you know, tracking shooting. Like, you know, they can measure a player's speed down the court in the first quarter compared to the fourth to measure, like, fatigue.
Wow.
I mean,
wow.
The amount of information that teams have at their disposal now is just mind-blowing.
It is.
And like he said, if they start to use that, you know, just thinking about the Stephen Curry stuff where he said, you know, he's an exceptional outside shooter, and that's obvious. And you know, it helps, it validates the kind of barbershop talk thinking where it's like, you know, Stephen Curry, nobody's as good as him from outside. And
right.
Now we have proof. No one is as good as him from outside.
No one, he's the man.
But then you look at, you know, in the paint, he's below average.
Right.
And part of that's because he's like 140 pounds sopping wet. And the other part is, you know, everybody's so worried about him from outside that once he gets inside, you know, he's just among the trees.
Exactly. Yeah.
And it'll be interesting to see if teams kind of game plan around this data and just look at it and say, all right, let him in the paint. You know,
we
got to just sort of funnel him in the paint, get him off of that 3-point line. Obviously, teams are going to try and do that anyway. But now it's like they have the hard evidence that that is what you have to do if you want to win. It's just
It almost gives you a blueprint. It gives you a blueprint
on,
you know, players' tendencies, where they like to take shots, how often they take shots from certain places on the court. I mean, it's unbelievable. Those VU cameras, which I think we talked about it on Current Sports, I believe last month it was, that now the entire league is, the NBA at least, is using this every single game, every single moment is being captured on these cameras so they can analyze. And I thought that was unbelievable. Another thing that I thought was really cool about the article was this article that, you know, Ashton put together with Grantland, the top 10 outside shooters per 100 shot attempts. So it kind of narrows it down so specifically. And you have, like, Jose Calderon is number one. Kyle Korver, 2, Steve Nash, 3, Stephen Curry, 4, Dirk Nowitzki, 5. I'll just go with the top 5 there. But it just shows you, you know, that's showing how accurate individuals are based on how many shot attempts they have, showing, you know, narrowing it even more specifically. I mean, that's unbelievable stuff, and I think you're not just going to be seeing this adopted only in the NBA. I think other teams are going to be using this because any advantage is a good advantage, you know?
Yep, and I think I just read that Duke had them installed in Cameron Indoor Stadium, and I feel like if they have those at the college level, I think that's going to change the way teams, you know, put together draft strategies because you get so much more information about a player. And when you're investing millions of dollars in a 20-year-old kid, you're going to want all the information you can get. And if you get a better understanding, I feel like people would have known, hey, Austin Rivers, not a very good player. Like, you know, he went to Duke. He made some big shots. Not a very accurate shooter. Not a great pass. You know, he's just not a great player. And they would have known that. Instead of sending him, you know, picking him with the 10th pick in the draft, maybe he falls to the 20th. I just think, you know,
the more information's
available.
If college use this,
it's going to be huge.
It changes the game. It changes the game almost, you know, of you know, just, you know, seeing with your naked eye a player out there playing as opposed to having the hard statistical evidence to back it up.
Right.
Crazy
and you
stuff.
Know, and we saw, you know, look at Moneyball, the movie.
Right,
I mean,
right.
And the real story, too. I mean, you just look at the old line of thinking giving way to the new line of thinking, and it's going to take time. And I think, you know, baseball's kind of fully embraced the statistical revolution. I think basketball's well on its way.
Oh, without a doubt. Interesting stuff there. Again, the NBA season starts on, I believe, October 29th. October 29th is the first official start of the NBA season. Thanks so much, Ashton, for sitting down with me. Well, we unfortunately have run out of time. Before we leave, special thanks to everyone that contributed to today's episode of Current Sports. Production assistants Alex Sharg, Matt Ludke, engineer Aaron Young, Peter Wharf, our station manager here at WKAR. Thanks to MSU professor Ashton Shortridge again for joining me. Such a great interview. You can listen to Current Sports with me, Al Martin, on WKAR's Lansing and WKAR FM HD3's Lansing. As always, take care, have a fantastic day, and be easy, people.